Try 4 weeks of The Spectator absolutely free. And, for this month only, you'll receive a Spectator wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffeehouse Shots, Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and our Scotland editor Alex Massey. This week was supposed to be the week the whole of the United Kingdom moved out of lockdown, slowly but surely, but in lockstep. Instead, however, you have a situation where the devolved administrations have all chosen a slightly different path. On Sunday, when we first heard that the Conservative government wished to change its slogan from stay home to stay alert, Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister, quickly moved to say that she would not be adopting the slogan, suggesting that it was risky. We now have a situation where, depending on where you are, north or south of the border, you can do different things. So, is this about party politics? Is a statement being made? Or is it something a bit more practical? Fraser, what do you think is behind Nicola Sturgeon's decision this week not to move at the same pace as Boris Johnson has decided for England, in the sense that if you are in England, you can meet with someone in the park, you can go to the garden centre, but you cannot do these things north of the border?
Yeah, I must admit, when I first saw this, I smelt a rat. I was watching the Prime Minister's statement on Sunday on BBC Scotland, and as soon as he finished, it went to the presenter, who was saying, by the way, that only related to England. In Scotland, nothing has changed, there's no relaxation. But along comes Nicola Sturgeon, being immediately quite critical of Boris Johnson, saying that his message is confusing, her message is stay at home. Now, initially I thought, oh, I know what she's up to. The nationalists love to take every single issue and try to work out if they can just basically put a wedge between Scotland and England. Even better, make out that Scotland's being threatened by a UK system that puts England's interests first. However, I find her not guilty of this charge for a couple of reasons. One was that she actually stuck by Boris all the way through. When he was actually saying that Britain shouldn't lock down, and people like Piers Morgan were saying this was crazy and he's killing people, Nicola Sturgeon was actually defending the policy in Scotland at a time when it wasn't particularly easy to do so. Then she stuck with the UK agenda. So you had stay home, protect the NHS, save lives. That was up there in Scotland, except the word Scottish, save Scotland's NHS, was inserted behind it. But most importantly, she's right to say that this is a regional problem. If you look at COVID, there are clusters of it, and some parts of a country are more affected than others. It's true in Britain, it's true for every other country in Europe, and in Scotland, it does seem to be growing faster. So it makes sense for Scotland to be more cautious than the rest of England, and to my mind, it also makes sense for Yorkshire to be more cautious than London. I think there needs to be regional variation here. And I think Nicola Sturgeon, although she is in the business of playing politics with this, she is, after all, a politician, I don't think she's really doing so in this occasion. But mind you, I don't live in Edinburgh, so Alex might be able to correct me.
And Alex, on that, I mean, I've spoken to Conservative MPs in Scotland who are worried she is playing politics. You have headlines this week, with Nicola Sturgeon ultimately telling the English not to cross the border unless it's, essential travel. And there's a worry that actually, in a way, what the effects of devolution and the coronavirus response could do is to make devolution seem more visible and potentially encourage nationalism. So what do you make of it?
Well, I mean, that obviously is one possibility. On the other hand, you could argue that the so-called four nations approach is both a recognition of the reality of the United Kingdom, because it's not a unitary state, and that it shows actually that the UK possesses rather more flexibility than its critics sometimes allow, that the United Kingdom is a sort of baggy and capacious place in which different agendas and different policies can be pursued at different speeds. I mean, I agree with Fraser, but it seems to me, rather absurd to assume that there ought to be, the same policy for London as for, say, Shetland, where their needs are often going to be rather different. And that includes in this present emergency. And the other thing I would say, and again, I agree with Fraser, that actually I don't think that Nicola Sturgeon is using this as a kind of, another wedge issue to further the cause of independence, which is not to say that some of her supporters don't see it like that, but she doesn't, I think. It's simply that she doesn't have time to be playing games of that sort. You know, she's appearing at the briefing every day. This is a full spectrum operation for the government, and you don't have time to be messing around with the usual kind of trivial differentiation that, yes, the SNP are very fond of. And also, I think it's also worth pointing out that the difference between Scotland and England, even this week and so on, has been exaggerated somewhat. You know, people in Scotland can go outside more frequently than had previously been the case. I think we're going to see some more movement on that next week. Nicola Sturgeon said on Friday that, you know, she understands that, you know, we can't go on like this in perpetuity. People have to get back to some kind of normality and reasonably soon. You know, I think that across the UK, in terms of the four approaches, because you see modest shifts in Wales and Northern Ireland as well, I liken it to, you know, the start of a marathon and so on. It's a staggered start, perhaps, with England going off first, but everybody is running along the same course and towards the same destination.
Now, Fraser, we know that our number is higher in Scotland, according to data, than in, you know, a lot of the parts of England. But ultimately, I think part of the reason there has been this perception in some quarters that Nicola Sturgeon is taking a political approach is because when on Sunday she said she wasn't going to opt for the Stay Alert slogan, she didn't say, in Scotland, we have a higher rate of infection and we're a bit worried we're behind England here, so we're going to stick with stay at home. She said that she thought the stay alert slogan didn't really mean anything as far as she could understand it, and implied that those who did use that slogan were taking a very risky approach. So do you think that even though her overall intention might be one that is science-based, there is probably an opportunity she can't quite resist taking when it comes to scoring points over Westminster?
Look, she loves scoring points over Westminster, but on this particular question, she also has the advantage of being right. I mean, what does Stay Alert mean? I mean, apparently, the original, it was conceived as an acronym. A was supposed to stand for something, L was supposed to stand for something. Then they dropped the acronym and went with it anyway. It's not a particularly edifying or clear slogan. And I think, of course, her backers, she will have been all the time being urged to have a go at Boris, and she will be resisting that pressure. I think she succumbed to it a bit then, but I have to say that the government does deserve it a wee bit. I mean, I'm not one of these thinking it's the worst slogan in the world, but it's not particularly clear. She actually did say that Scotland's R number is a little bit higher. She was saying yesterday she thinks the range is between 0.5 and 0.9, but then again, we've just had information from the English authorities saying that they think England's range is there as well. Now, if you look at the Cambridge University model, it gives an R range of 0.4 for London, 0.7 for the Midlands, 0.8 for Yorkshire. Plenty of regional differentiation. Now, I do think it's the case that there is potential danger for the union here. I think Boris Johnson pointedly described himself as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom back on Sunday. And he's trying to take the country with him. He tried to have a four nations approach into lockdown. But when he comes out, I think he's going to have to forget about four nations and instead think about 12, 15, 20 separate regions and allow local authorities. I think he should let Andy Burnham in Manchester have more powers over that. I think this is the time now to take a more devolved approach. But that's not to say there aren't further dangers for the union down the road. But we should also bear in mind that Nicola Sturgeon has struggled to do testing on the scale that the rest of England has managed to do testing. It has been pretty bad in Scotland. She hasn't taken nearly much as flack for it as Boris Johnson and Matt Hancock have done. So Scotland is not just that the virus seems to be spreading a little bit faster than in England, it's that the Scottish NHS seems to be coping with it not quite as well when it comes to getting the tests which we so badly need.
Yes, Alex, on that, if you look at the figures in Scotland, as Fraser says, compared to England, behind on testing, care homes have their own scandal. Do you think that it is getting the same level of attention as the government and Westminster's failures are? And if not, why not?
Well, yes, I mean, this is one of the ironies of the situation, which is that, you know, you have consistent polling in Scotland that says, you know, that people have confidence in Nicola Sturgeon to a much greater extent than people in England have confidence in Boris Johnson, that people think the Scottish government is handling the crisis better than the Westminster government, even though, in point of fact, it is all but impossible to find any real substantive differences in approach taken north and south of the border. You know, and the same problems, as you suggest, have been arising. So problems with PPE, big problems with scaling up testing, and then actually running as many tests each day as you can. You know, we have unused testing capacity in Scotland at the moment, which is something that I think an increasing number of people are finding quite difficult to understand. And then, as you suggest, you know, the problem in care homes, where there is, you know, a horrific situation in lots of care homes. That's not unique to Scotland, obviously, but nor is it something where the Scottish government can obviously say they've got a grip on matters more efficiently, more effectively, more firmly than the UK government has. And of course, you know, you start off with the situation in terms of what explains this apparent discrepancy between the reality of the record on the ground and people's estimation of the government's performance. And a lot of it comes down to the fact that in the first place, SNP supporters are bound to give the Scottish government lots of credit, while at the same time being very sceptical about the UK government. But secondly, and this is something where the polling again shows that even Conservative and Labour voters in Scotland are, on the whole, pretty pleased with the job Nicola Sturgeon has done. And that, I think, reflects her gifts as a communicator, that she has been consistent and you know, where possible, clear. Now, that doesn't mean that she has had a faultless performance, but everybody sort of knows where they stand with her. And communication is one of her great skills, and it's something I think that she's better at than the Prime Minister. And this shows in the polling ratings. And it's also just the fact that you know, in general, people think the Scottish government performs better than the UK government does, whether that's justified or not, because the Scottish government has Scottish in front of it and the UK government doesn't. And Scottish is the best and most valuable and powerful brand north of the border. And that includes in politics.
And Fraser, I just wondered finally, do you think that this number 10 takes Nicola Sturgeon seriously as an opponent? Alex spoke about how Nicola Sturgeon is a very effective communicator, but I've been struck by how we repeatedly hear that government figures are very frustrated with Nicola Sturgeon at Cobra meetings. If they tell her what's happening, straight away she'll go out and tell the press before they have the chance. And if they don't, they complain that she will take to the airwaves to complain that Scotland is being kept out. So do you think this number 10 led by Boris Johnson yet has a handle on how to work with Nicola Sturgeon?
I might be a bit unfair here, but I think a lot of English Tories just don't know what to make of Scottish nationalists. They can't work out. The politics is just very different there. The debates, the language, the topics are just fundamentally different. If you're engaging with nationalists, then you're talking a different political language. And I think Gordon Brown realised this very well when he was Prime Minister. I think David Cameron was constantly kind of outwitted by Alex Sam and Nicola Sturgeon. I think Boris Johnson risks that as well. For example, you know, one of the great tricks they tried to make out is that Scotland's her fiefdom and he shouldn't be going up there very often. I think he should be going up there a lot. I think right now the union remains in peril. If you look at the opinion polls, the lead for no in the referendum, would you vote for independent Scotland tomorrow, is quite a low lead. It's as low as it's been for a couple of years. We are sort of one big disaster away from another referendum, and it's one that I'm afraid to say the unionist side would struggle at, because they have not been doing what everybody said they should have been doing after the 2016 vote, which is to start to fight every month as if the other referendum is around the corner and to demonstrate the power and the potency of the union. Brexit has made this a lot more difficult, and it doesn't seem to be a particular priority of this number 10. And Nicola Sturgeon is a formidable politician. Of course, she's going to be difficult in these SAGE meetings, or visit the COBRA meetings. And of course, she's going to try their patience. I mean, that's what she's there for. She does not have a vested interest in the successful operation of the United Kingdom. She would like that kingdom to be disbanded. So I don't think they can really expect her to behave as well as a pliable Secretary of State would behave. But I will also say that I think she knows, in the same way that Keir Starmer knows, when to draw the line, how much opposition is too much opposition. So I was all set, I was all prepared to see the SNP pushing it too far, trying to exploit this flawed political advantage. I haven't seen it so far, and I will admit to being reasonably impressed with Nicola Sturgeon's performance. I mean, she gets away with a lot more than Boris, given at the testing. I think the press is far more likely to turn on Boris Johnson than the Scottish press is likely to turn on Nicola Sturgeon. But then again, she's quite, she's an assured performer and is so far having a reasonably good crisis.
Finally, Alex, do you agree with that?
Yeah, in broad terms, I do. I mean, I think, you know, that some of the stuff around COBRA meetings and so on is, you know, look, if there is a COBRA meeting at 6 p.m. on a Wednesday, say, well, Nicola Sturgeon has her next daily briefing at lunchtime the following day. The UK government doesn't have its until, 5 o'clock. So what she's supposed to say to people in Scotland, well, I could tell you what some of the latest stuff from COBRA is, but I'm afraid you'll have to wait for the Prime Minister at 5 o'clock. No, of course not. You know, it's just a simple timetabling thing. You know, if they don't like it, they should have their press conferences earlier in the day and before Nicola Sturgeon has hers. So, you know, I think what the complaint really demonstrates, though, is a degree of exasperation and an unwillingness to recognise the reality of the United Kingdom, which is that Scotland, England, Wales, Northern Ireland are different places. And the notion that the Celtic fringe, to use a term I rather dislike, and so on, will sort of jump to attention anytime Westminster clicks its fingers and so on is thoroughly outdated to the extent it was ever applicable in the first place. So I think, you know, that there's a lot of learning still to be done in Westminster and Whitehall about the realities of devolution, the realities of the United Kingdom and its constitutional architecture these days. Now, clearly, in terms of what Fraser was saying about the national question, about independence and so on, one of the things that obviously that I think that in the post-COVID-19 era will be a bone of contention will be, you know, will independent Scotland, for instance, been able to fund the kind of business support, the kind of job retention support, both for salaried employees and the self-employed, that the UK Treasury has been able to. I mean, I think one would expect pro-union forces in Scotland to make a great deal out of that. On the other hand, you would expect nationalists to say, well, perhaps an independent Scotland might have been able to handle the public health side of it a little bit better, although I'm not sure that there's any real evidence to support that contention, but nevertheless, that's what people will believe. I'm not sure that this will actually really be a game-changing moment for the national question one way or the other, partly because, you know, most recent opinion polls suggest that it's about a 50-50 proposition in terms of independence or union, and most people are pretty set in their ways, pretty firm in their views on that question. And so the number of people there are to be persuaded in the floating middle is not a great percentage or proportion of the population, although, you know, it is quite clear that over the last 2 or 3 years, slowly but surely, more of those people who have been making up their minds have been doing so on the pro-independence side of the equation. And that obviously is a long-term challenge for the UK to try and reverse that process, but I'm not sure that the coronavirus is actually going to be, if you like, the testing ground for that battle to come.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Fraser.
Try 4 weeks of The Spectator absolutely free. And for this month only, you'll receive a Spectator wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger